On today's episode of Family History Ron, how do you mark what you've already done? Or better yet, how do you bookmark where you are in family search? And what exactly does it mean when you're like a third cousin twice removed? What exactly does removed mean? You could have family search. All that and a whole bunch more questions. We're playing catch up on this episode coming right after this.
Hey, out there, anybody out there? I know it's just a minute early, but we seem to be late all the time, so I thought maybe we could start a little early
today. Well, and we haven't done it for so long.
Don't know how to get to the Facebook page.
Yeah, wrong to quit doing it. But we're here. We'd love to hear from you.
Oh, there's a few people. Can you hear us out there? Hello, hello.
Oh, yay. We're up past 10.
Tell us if you hear us, because we can't test that stuff. We think you can see us, but tell us you can hear us or not. Oh, there's a thumb. Okay, yeah.
Oh.
All right. Hi. Good to see y'all. Seems like it's been forever.
Since December.
No, we had something in January.
Maybe. Because you've been
and
sick.
And then I was out February to get ready and to get ready for Boots Tech.
I had pneumonia.
And now it's March. So welcome.
Glad to see you again.
Yeah. You know, while we're waiting for people, I want to talk about one of my vices. I was going to say my ultimate vice, but I got a whole mess of them. But do you realize it's like Girl Scout cookie time? They even have an app now on your phone that you can push a button and it'll tell you where the Girl Scouts are going to show up in your area, what store they're going to be at. And, a couple of Saturdays ago when my son, Jarrett, who's been on this with us before.
And they went and bought boxes.
Yeah, we walked
not
up to the
individual.
We boxes. Went up to the Girl Scout cookie growl and the young girl. What would you like? It says, I just buy cases is what I buy. So she was all freaked out because we bought a couple cases. Of course, the only thing I buy is the Thin Mints, man.
Well, that's all our kids eat.
I mean, I don't know what you guys like in your Girl Scout cookies, but Thin Mints is my favorite.
Well, it's the only thing cookie our kids eat there, too.
Well, maybe because that's the only one I bought, and so that's the only one they've learned to taste.
I bought others when they were little, but the only one they wanted was the Thin Mint.
Yeah.
So we learned that quickly and got over it.
Yeah. So what I do is I buy a case or something, and then I go stick it in the freezer.
Uh-huh.
Then I have Girl cookies all year long.
Well, not if the kids find them.
Yeah,
that's true. If our kids come over to see us and they get a hold of the cookies, wow.
Yeah.
Our grandkids like them too.
So how's the weather? Well, we're waiting here for a second. I'll go another couple minutes just to get people a chance. We're finally warming up a little bit. We're up in the 40s.
But it poured rain today.
Yeah.
But that's okay. Yeah. Snow in the mountains, rain in the valley. I'm okay with that.
Yeah. We just have to make sure we don't warm up too fast. We're going to flood. Unfortunately, some of you out there are probably dealing with flooding.
Oh, Midwest.
And I feel so bad.
Breaks my heart to see what's happening in, like, Nebraska.
Yeah, here's one. Somebody from Alabama. Thin Mints are the best. Yeah, I got another one. I avoid Girl Scouts because if I see them, I buy too many. Yeah, I got the same problem.
He's got that problem. They love him, but
She says perhaps Boy Scouts can sell their own cookies and do away with Friends of Scouting.
Oh, that'd be lovely.
Oh, well. Well, I think we've got enough here. We got about 47 or so that are on. I think we go ahead and get started. So some of our questions are way back in, like, December. So the answers may be obvious, but we'll go through them anyway. If you have some questions, feel free to also ask a few, as we're going along, and then we'll try to blend them a little bit since some of these questions are older. But I want to get through them quick so that we can get into the more newer ones. What do we got, Sheree?
It says, whenever changes are made to the tree, family tree requests that users submit a reason. It's an unfortunate fact that most of the changes are left unexplained. However, many users can point to changes in the changelog that are labeled Family Search, virtually none of which are ever explained. Would it be a big deal for Family Search to insert automatically generated reasons? It would make it much better.
Yeah. Well, the answer is that we could never come up with a really good reason. And there's several reasons why Family Search would be a contributor on a person. One is, the biggest one was when we moved data from the old system to the new system. We initially started out by putting the name of the people who actually contributed that data when we moved it over. And they started calling us on the phone saying, somebody's hacked my account, because I don't remember ever logging in that particular time. So we had to go back and remove the data and go back and add it again, this time changing it to be Family Search so people didn't feel like their accounts were being, you know, accessed. And, you know, the reason statement would be something generic, you know, like automated process to update a data fix up problem, or it would be an admin. So there's only a few reasons that Family Search would make a change. One is, if we migrated data from another system and we did it wrong, then we'll, or we migrated data, it will have Family Search on. Or if a support case was sent in to support and some admins there needed to go in and solve your case by doing some work for you, like you say your ordinance is on the wrong person, then they'll go find the right ordinance, they'll make a new person, and all the work they're doing is reported as familysearch.org. And it would be just, you know, yeah, although it'd be nice, we find that we'll do it and we'll do it in English, and then people in China will see it and they're like, well, what's this English guy talking, doing stuff that doesn't speak Chinese? And we even tried one time to think about putting it all in different languages, and that just makes it worse. So just, it gets bad. Our main thing is to not touch the data at all. That's our attempt always. And so we just try very carefully not to touch anything. So we're probably not going to make up some statements. We made up a couple of them, and it's just caused confusions and calls into support. So, okay, next one.
It says, this is from Georgiana. It says, I noticed a few days ago, actually in December, that Family Search dumped a massive amount of new records to be reviewed and attached. This came as quite a surprise. I started going through the records, and while many of the records do belong to the same person, many do not. The names and dates are the same, but the localities are totally different. I feel quite the need to go through the tree, which will take an enormous amount of time, and review these records before someone else does. Others who are not as careful will simply attach them irregardless. They will attach them because the names and dates are the same and or similar.
Yeah.
Is there some way that Family Search to notify us users, maybe a banner alert across the top, similar to when the system goes down? While it is great to have new records, it would be nice to have a heads up.
Well, that's not like two questions.
No.
Because you were talking about having to attach them all, and then another, later you were talking about a banner.
Well, it says, is there some way to notify the users? And they said, like using a banner when
notify users of what?
That you're doing a record dump, I guess. Oh. I don't know. She was concerned that Family Search had dropped a massive amount.
We did get a lot more hints, and that's because we updated some of our matching systems. But I do agree, and I've been working with that team to make some changes in this area. See, when we made a change with obituaries and stuff, there's not a lot of dates and places.
No.
So we had to write code to say, well, let's line up family names that are similar. And if you have a mother and a father and kids that are all assigned a similar name, they may be about that family. And unfortunately, when they did that, they didn't put enough emphasis on location and dates. So because of that, and unfortunately, this has been going on for several months, but I'm working with a team to make corrections. They're looking into what effort it would take to do that. I think that if the dates are way off, you know, 20 years, 30 years, something like that, they should not consider them the same. Or if the places are very far off, then they shouldn't consider them as well. So it got out there. And in some cases it's been good. In some cases it's been bad. And we're just going to refine that a little bit here over the next few months as we're working on updating.
Okay.
Okay, next one.
This is from Irene. It says, I find multiple sources already attached to my ancestors, but the info in the source has not been added to the person detail pages. I spend a lot of time checking the sources and adding the info found to the person detail pages. Do you have a suggestion as to how to mark an already attached source to remind myself that I've already gleaned the info from the source and have added it already?
From a source, not from a hint, right?
No, she says sources.
Okay. So we don't. However, the team is in a prototype stage right now of looking at the sources on a person and family tree and then telling you, they'll put a message on the screen on the sources tab that says, there are people in this source that have not been, that are not attached to this record. And that's just to help you understand that that there's somebody that may be missing in the tree or in the family. And so that's the one thing we're looking at right now. Don't have a date as when that happened, but that's what we're thinking about doing. Okay, while you're looking at the next one, let's do one more and then I'll jump over to
that. It's really short. Do you think that we will ever be able to put our photos and documents in chronological order someday?
Yes, I do believe we'll be able to do that. We're initially working on the ability to drag and drop. As I mentioned in the Roots Tech, we can drag and drop memories in an album so you can order them how you want. But I also want to encourage people to put in dates and places and so forth for your memories, because we're also going to work on the ability to go, you know, sort by date, either oldest or youngest date, earliest date, and earliest or latest date. Yeah. And then have it all flip around. I think that's where most people are doing, is they want to sort by the age of the memory, you know, were they young and then older or whatever. Mm-hmm. Okay, Gary, we'll take, we'll do one of yours. You said, when a church member logs into Family Search, it gives that unit credit for a member logging. If you log in with Family Search app, do you still get the great get credit? And the answer is yes. What happens is the data from the mobile app may take a little bit longer to get into the back-end systems, but that does get sent over to the same system. So within a day or two or so, then that also gets counted. So yes, that should be just fine. If you're finding out that that's not the case, let me know. But that should happen, because we're putting all that data in the same place, and using where we put that data is what generates your family history activity report. Okay, next one.
How do we view the information about a possible duplicate without clicking review and attach? In the tools section on a person's page, when I click on possible duplicates, it now takes me to a data problems page with a list of duplicates showing the red exclamation marks. Before the update, we would right click on the possible duplicate to open in a new tab and compare the information. It was very helpful. Now the only way to do that is to click review and attach and then cancel. This brings up the view that we previously were able to access the duplicates from.
I think there's some confusion here, because when you talk about possible duplicates, that's about two people, and you've always had to push the review and attach. We haven't had a preview place where you could look at the two to decide whether you want to try to merge them or not. You're confusing that with historical record hinting, where you can click the historical record as being hinted, and it'll bring up a record view to show you all the data on that record, and then you could choose to attach it or not attach it to the person. Ah. So I think there's just a little confusion there. Stephanie pointed out, thank you, Stephanie, for reminding me, a new feature that we added just around Roots Tech, just right before Roots Tech, is you can add an audio to photos and memories. So you can have an existing photo, go in and click an icon on your computer. It'll just record through your microphone, or you can do it on the mobile app as well, and just get your audio with your picture to help tell the story.
Yeah, pretty cool.
You know, what you got next?
I have an ancestor that was sealed to a woman and her children in 1919. She died in 1865, 56 years earlier. I have heard of similar situations in the early church. Maybe you could enlighten us about this practice. She shows us a spouse with no marriage relationship. Should there be a standardized option for sealed only, or would it be best to just add a note of explanation? And then she's giving you an example here with some numbers. This came from Sandy.
Okay. Hill. Well, I think what she's referring to is this is a very old practice that was done before 1894. There was a practice at the time. This started happening particularly when we had more than one temple. We started getting the Salt Lake Temple and things. That there was a rule back then in the old past, back in pre 1892. I think I said 92. Didn't I say
94?
I can't 94. I can't remember now. This is before Wilford Woodruff's declaration that we seal ourselves to our fathers and mothers. So he said fathers, but he meant the parents.
Parents.
Before that, you could only seal. You could only go and seal up to the first heir that joined the church, way back when, and then there kind of a custom grew out of this because. There was a custom that sort of developed that was around sealing. You needed to be sealed to obviously get into the celestial kingdom, and people started sealing deceased women or single women or sometimes just somebody else's wives, and they would seal them to the prophet or some notable general authority or a member of the 12. I can't imagine the thinking, but it could be just, give them a good opportunity to make it kind of thing.
You may want
to
look at that, and if you have,
I'll go look at those. But that practice has stopped. But those ceilings are there. The ceilings still exist because they're valid ceilings, and we don't show them on Family Tree because the only time we will show them is if that person is listed as a spouse of that other person, and those ceilings. I wouldn't worry about them if they existed. I wouldn't be concerned about it. The purpose of the family tree is to be genealogically correct, familiar correct, meaning this family was a unit, and those seedings will be taken care of appropriately in the time they're getting taken care of. And since 1894, when Wilford Woodruff said we're to seal to our parents and so forth and to our spouses and so forth, then that practice stopped pretty much, and then that's what we've been doing since then, so. I wouldn't worry about them. The ceiling probably won't ever show up anyway unless you have that spouse in there. Okay, let's see what in here. Jenny says, will we ever be able to get in words how we're related to distant relatives, not just visual branch? So.
Oh, they want that listing like that.
Yeah, the one that says second cousin, two times removed or something like that. Yes, we want to do that. We turned it on only in English on the mobile app just to test it out. And there's some issues there because that's not always accurate in all the different cultures. And so we've been working with our international folks to see what's the best way that we can be unified. I don't want to say it one way in one place, one place, and way in another place. And by the way, most people don't understand what removed means. I always get lots of questions about that.
I don't.
So we're probably not going to use those terms. We're going to come up with a different way to say something like, they're your third cousin one generation away. Something like that is what we're thinking about. And then we're checking to see how that will work in different parts of the world. So we didn't want to go too quickly and start spreading that all over the place until we felt comfortable. Oh, like it's why it only shows up in the mobile app.
Okay.
Now we're going through a lot of questions here because I'm trying to get us caught up to sort of today's sort of things.
Yeah, this is from Linda. Is it officially written anywhere that we can seal a spouse of an ancestor after doing their ordinances and the 110 rule is followed to their parents, even if the parents have no ordinances completed? You know, as family history people, we always want documentation.
I thought this one was open.
No, that's a new
one. Oh,
it
is open.
You did pull them up there.
All right, let me explain that one. This one is sealing the parents, a sealing of a child to the parents. Now, the number one rule is whenever possible, you should always do all of the ordinances for all parties in the family before you do the sealings. Okay, so the children need to have all the ordinances done. Parents need to have their ordinances done. Then you can seal the child, the parents together, and then the children can be sealed to the parents. There is one case where it's acceptable. There's a couple of cases, I guess, now that where it's acceptable to do the sealing out of order. And one of those is when you're going up your line. So this is you. So that's you. And you go up your line. I don't care how you go, to some ancestor up here. And then you go down your line, and this is an ancestor. So here's this family. This is the descendant of a common ancestor of yours. You're perfectly within your rights to do that person. But we want, not only that, we want you to do that whole family. So here's a spouse, and here's their kids. You know, let's put little circles for the kids. And, you know, those kids had spouses too. And they had their own kids, blah, 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 blah. So we want you to do all the sealings and all the ordinances for this family here. You know, oh, that looks kind of funny. It looks like a jack-o'-lantern or something.
Oh, yeah.
And I keep forgetting to not do that. So you want to do all the ordinances for this family. That includes the descendant, their spouse, and all of their kids. Okay? But you can't go up to the spouse's parents and do those people, unless you have a common ancestor between these people and you, right? Common ancestor is defined as you go up from here, and you end up in a common ancestor here. And the common ancestor, Noah, Adam, they don't count. Okay. Mm-hmm. So in this case, since you're not related to any of these people, technically you should not be doing their ordinances, because you're only supposed to be doing ones you're related to. But in this case, we have permission from the temple department to allow you to seal this spouse to their parents without doing the parents' ordinances. Okay? The other case is ordinances ready, when because the family search doesn't enforce the ordering of sealing and things like that. And when we did ordinances ready, we went to the temple department and said there will be times when we'll be handing out sealings out of order, and wanted to understand if they wanted us to block that or not. And they gave us permission to go ahead and allow those to be done out of order. So those are the only cases that I'm aware of that it's acceptable to do that. And certainly if you reserve the family, you should make sure all the ordinances are done before you do the sealings. And then in this descendancy case, you could do that. Okay, what's
here's
next?
One from, I don't know, I can't see her name, Leela Jones. Anyway, it says, new changes. How do I merge people on my desktop computer? When I go to merge, it just gives me hints with no place to merge.
Yeah, once again, and I think there's a confusion there between merge and hints. Merging is you get a data problem now. Before it used to be you had to click possible duplicates. Now you get a data problem, you click on it, and then you get the review and attach. So I think that there's just confusion there. So this person needs to, Linda, is that the same person? Yeah. Same person asking the other direction. So, it, Linda, if you're out there and you're still
it's
confused.
Not Linda, it's Leah.
Leah. If Jones. You're still confused, I would recommend going to your family history, Temple Family History Consultant in your ward, and ask them to help you see that. Okay.
Okay. What records in Spanish are being microfilmed now? Oh. This is from Lorraine.
I sorry. I don't know. So I'm going to put that down on my list to find out. I know that we did the several censuses in Mexico, and they're with our partners. They're helping us get those indexed. We've presented some of those to members of the church on the site. And so they're asking, let's see, Facebook questions. Sending myself an email. So they were asking, what records in Spanish are being microfilmed now?
Mm-hmm.
What records in Spanish are being microfilmed now? Okay, what's the next one, Sheree?
This is from Lorraine. Who can we contact about making certain records available to index? Maybe they have some?
No, I don't. Okay, so if you have records in your possession, or there's records in your area that you believe are important, you can contact Family Search just through support and say, I'd like to visit with somebody about what we can do as a ward or a stake or whatever to help get these records. Now, remember, the you know, we just don't go in and film records and do that kind of stuff. We have to have permission from the people who own the records. We have to make arrangements and agreements to be able to show that on Family Search, those kinds of things. But you're always welcome to call the support line, and they'll get that information to the right people over in the records area, and then they'll get back to you.
This one is, how do I get to the discovery page with all the various options? Now I sign in, familysearch.org/discovery.
Yeah, that's correct. So we made a big splash at RootsTech about discovery items. There's actually a banner now on the not logged in homepage. There's a great big banner on the top. On the logged in homepage, there's a smaller little banner. It's called a M-box, marketing box. It's a little box. I think it's slightly lower in the page that you can click and go directly to the discovery things. We've got so many new things that we're having to try to see if we need to rethink how the menu items we put at the very top. And that is an extremely difficult thing to do. We've been working on it for over a month to figure out if we need to make changes there to help you find these things. And we're still working on it, and it's still a ways out. I'll get them later.
Okay. This is from Diane. I was told by an area authority that the ordinance ready names are ready to go to the temple because they have already been checked for duplicates. Is that true?
The answer is yes. There will be some who recognize that there can always be a duplicate of something because the machine will never, we've developed a machine to not give suggested duplicates unless the level of duplication is sufficiently high. It's not perfect, because we do hand out duplicates that may not be duplicates, but we tried very hard not to do that. And as a result, there could be some duplicates out there. Most of the time, those are things that have very little data, like just a name and that they're dead. But think about what people do when they're using Family Search. They go in, they add a name, or they wander around their tree, they find a name. It says that ordinances are available, or it has an exclamation mark that says there's a duplicate. If there's an exclamation mark that says there's a duplicate, they go resolve the duplicate and either say it's not a match or they merge them together. And then they go look at the ordinances and they see whether or not there's any available. And if they are, they click reserve. I mean, that's what most people do.
That's what I do.
Yeah, that's what most everybody does. Well, that's exactly what Ordinance Ready does too. It goes in and it looks and it says, first off, if there's no data, there can be no data problems at all. If there's one data problem, then Ordinance Ready will skip that person. But if it says there's no data problems, it qualifies, there's no duplicates as far as the system can tell, it's not in the 110, then it'll go ahead and provide it to you. So that's not any different, and it's a little bit more than what most people would end up doing as their own moving around. And so there's nothing more that we can do on our side to find any more duplicates. If it's a real common name or something, you may want to look around a little bit, but in general, you don't have to worry about it.
Great. And this one, is there any chance that the records will be filmed in Romania?
I have no idea.
We hope someday.
Well, we want them in all parts of the world. Yeah, but they're, you know, it's a government thing.
Yeah, they own the records and they have to get permission, so.
Yeah. Record.
That came from Kathy.
Filmed in Romania. Yeah, I have a sister-in-law that's from Korea. That's
got some of the
frustrated.
Same issues.
Can't find anything. That's because they're Kosekis. In Korea, they have Kosekis. And Koseki is actually against, I found out just a few weeks ago, that in Korea, Kosekis, which is like a genealogy book, like you see of these Japus where it has like, I'm related to Confucius, and they know that because that genealogy book has been cut for thousands of years, thousands of years. And the Koseki is a similar kind of thing, but it's actually against the law in Korea to put that online. I didn't know that. And so, So that makes it very hard for you to get a copy of that unless you happen to find a relative in Korea that can share that with you. Okay, let me see if I got one over here. Do you think FamilySearch would ever provide the user a tally of ordinances submitted over the life of their efforts, viewable only to the user? There are some people that think that that's perfectly fine to do. Personally, I have a problem with that. And let me tell you why. Because generally in a system like this, people tend to compare themselves with each other. Even in, if you look at indexing, even this happens in indexing. Mm-hmm. And, you know, somebody who's just starting out with indexing, or they're not sure if they want to do indexing, and then they go listen to somebody, you know, talk, give a talk or something and talk about indexing, and they say, well, I've indexed, you know,
X amount,
40,000 records or something like that. And that's a great achievement, no doubt. But people in the audience that says, well, I'm an indexer and I've been working on it for 5 years and I've only done, you know, 1,000. I must be worthless.
Yeah.
Now imagine that when it comes to the temple. So the temple is a private thing. The temple is a personal worship. Is they don't take roll for who attended and who didn't attend. That is a no-no to track. And I think the brethren do not want temple worship to be discussed like that. And I think temple reservations and completing ordinances, and you say, well, I've completed, you know, I've saved, 10,000 ancestors. Then I just think that somebody else will say, like, take a tanner. I mean, there could be some tanners that'll say something like, well, I've looked in the tree for, you know, there's a tanner that lives down the road from us. He works several times a week. He's in family tree looking for things. And he's found like one person to take. And so even though he works on it 3 or 4 or 5 days a week, he would have done 2 cards. So I'm very concerned about that becoming a norm or something we all discuss about. And I get it. I understand the achievement. It's just that, it's not something that we want to demoralize others with. So I have a personal problem with it, and now and then we go and revisit it, you know, usually about every year or so we go revisit that. Somebody brings it up and we go talk about it again. And some say, I don't think it's a problem. And I say, well, okay, tell me what happens when this happens. And we go from there. Okay.
Okay. This is from Dana. It says, is it possible to change the format of the date that posts after a change is made in the latest changes? Currently, the date is listed with the month, day, and year in that order rather than in the day, month, year, which is, as you know, the accepted genealogical format. She's saying what it standardized comes this way. Why are they doing it that way?
Well, there's two fields for dates, and the two fields are what the user entered, and the other field is the standardized date. When the user is entering in the date, the standardized date interpretation of their entry shows up in a drop-down list. The user has a choice to pick that or not pick that. That's their choice. But we will take whatever they entered in and make our best attempt at standardizing what they entered in. So if you are wandering around and looking at your ancestors and you see dates that, you know, have 3/10/19, feel free to correct them. Feel free to go in and say, no, these should be 10/2019.
I do that all the time.
Which is a good thing to do.
I just go in just to standardize sometimes.
Yeah, and to update the dates, make them correct. Yep. So make them more, less confusing. Right, because in some parts of the world it could be interpreted differently.
Yeah.
So that's a perfectly good thing to do. You can always update it, even after it's been standardized or changed.
Okay. Sorry, this one is from Dana. Last one was from Linda. Mm. It says, "Is it possible?" When I'm adding sources, I get ready to write the reason statement, and the system hiccups, like it loads twice before I can really write the statement or pull over the information from the source to FamilySearch. Is this hopefully just a temporary glitch?
I'm going to consider that a temporary glitch. This was in January.
Okay.
So you can move on to the next one. Let me answer one here.
Oh, you're going to do that.
How do we change the address of the Family History Center? We have contacted Family Search and church offices here in Australia and is still incorrect. So Lynn, could you send me a personalized email about this particular thing? Ron@familysearch.org. Send me the email, give me the information and what you've tried and what's the current address that's showing and what should it be? And I'll see if I can find the right person to get that fixed. I'm assuming they're looking up family history centers and they're getting a bad address or something. So send me an email about that. Next question Barbara had is, can you add audio to someone else's picture that they uploaded? And I believe the answer to that is no. Only the owner can add audio to that picture, at least currently. I believe that's the case. I haven't actually tried it, but I'm pretty sure only the owner gets to do that. Okay, what are we going to see?
This one is from Trish. Why does Family Search allow people to add information through a GEDCOM? All it does is create a lot of duplicates, and there are no sources.
Yeah. There actually are some GEDCOMs that actually have sources, but very few of them. I did a study years ago where I looked up one of our most famous ancestors, John Tanner, to see how many copies of them there were in all the GEDCOMs and how many of them have sources and stuff. There was a couple of sources in there. And we actually have some volunteers out there that may be listening. You don't have to identify yourself or anything, but there's some volunteers out there that are actually helping us do an experiment to see actually how many duplications we actually are getting from GEDCOM files. You have to understand our intent is to not have duplicates in the tree. We try to control the flow of duplicates coming into the tree. And the way we're doing that is if there's a GEDCOM, you cannot upload a GEDCOM directly in the family tree. You upload it into a different place in the genealogies. And then from there, we analyze the GEDCOM to see if we already have data or we're missing data or we're not sure because these look like they're duplicates, but we're not 100% sure. And then we ask the person as part of that import process, the import from genealogies over, to look at the ones we weren't sure and tell us, is it a duplicate or not a duplicate? And so people could tell us it's not a duplicate when it really is. Or maybe they can't tell the difference, and so they say it's not a duplicate. And we're testing right now with some experts out there in the field on some samples to help us understand if it's how dramatic it is. You're not the only one that's been concerned about this. Eventually, I think we need to do this a different way because it's a lot of work to do it even by yourself, by hand. Okay,
this one's from Jennifer. She says, I have a question about Ordnance Ready and the Temple Queue. I feel a stewardship for a particular descendancy researched family line. My family and I do the ordinances we can, but then share with the temple the ones we cannot. I am excited that through Ordnances Ready, these ordinances may get done faster. My question is about what happens if a cousin claims these ordinances but then doesn't actually get them done. I understand that they revert back into the temple queue after a period of time, but have these ordinances lost their position in line? Would they now be back at the back of the line and have to start their weight all over again? If so, that doesn't seem fair. I can answer this one.
Okay, you answer.
When it is pulled back from somebody who hasn't done it, it reverts to the same place in the line where it was taken from. So it does not go to the end. It goes back into the exact spot where it was pulled from.
Very good. That's correct. And the time it waits is 90 days. So if a person through Ordnance Ready gets something from the shared temple list, they have 90 days to get it done. If they don't get it done in 90 days, it goes back to the original position in the temple list. So nothing's lost.
Isn't that cool?
That was very good, Sri. You did great. Here's a question online. When you find a child who died as a child and is known to be a child of a certain couple, but the gender of the child is unknown, if we do the child as unknown gender, we can't seal to the parents. Do we assign a gender that may be wrong? We do not have an answer for you right now. So that is something that we've talked about several times. And in reality, in the past, this is one of the reasons why years ago, before any of our computers or any Temple Ready or any of that kind of stuff, they used to do two ordinances for every person.
Yeah.
One is a male, one is a female, so they didn't mess up. Right now, we are not told that that's acceptable to do. So the only thing I think you could do right now is just leave that child an unknown gender, and we'll continue to discuss it. We'll continue to think about it, and you need to continue to look and see if there's some evidence somewhere in some will, some letter, some place. That child wants to have their ordinances done. So I'm confident that there will come a time when that sex is known and that person will have their ordinances done. But currently we don't make up or assume the sex of the child, because ordinances are specific to the gender.
This one is, you probably have to do this one for yourself.
Yeah.
Still on. This is from Tom in Connecticut. I like the new email confirmations that tell us the temple work is completed. So far, it covers work my wife and I have personally done. Will these notifications begin reporting on ordinances completed for family? We have shared the general and temple file and completed by others. How often are these emails sent out?
Somebody was saying that they noticed that the video is kind of choppy. I noticed a couple of places where it was a little choppy. It shouldn't be happening. I mean, we've actually upgraded our internet a while ago.
Yes,
and
we did.
We have gigabit internet.
Boosters and everything else.
So I think it may just be the Facebook. You know, must maybe some loads on the Facebook at the time. Right. Okay, I'm sorry. Now I got to go back. Let me look at the new email.
Confirmations.
Okay.
They like the fact that they get it. This is, will they begin reporting on ordinances completed for family that we have shared?
Okay, so they're talking about, you get little messages now inside of the messages, your message inbox on Family Search. And there's a tab now called Temple. And in that tab, you get a message when a ordinance is completed, is recorded in the temple. And I recommend you keep those. There's been some good suggestions from the community about allowing an individual to go in and select these messages and say, send them to my email, or select the messages and print them or turn them into a PDF or something, because those will be valuable to you as records that the ordinance was actually done and recorded, and you'll probably want to keep those things.
I think what he's asking, and I don't, maybe you,
I
said,
got to the question.
Oh,
yet.
Sorry.
I'm just explaining what they are. And so the question, the thing was, is right now, he's saying, can we see it for ones that we shared? So today, those messages are only coming to the people who printed the card. So if you shared ordinances to the temple, somebody else used Ordinance Ready today and got those ordinances and printed them and then did them. Excuse me, the person who printed it, which was not you who shared it, would get the message that said it was done. And so the answer is yes, we haven't completed that work yet, but our intention is to also send you, the original reserver who shared it with the temple, a copy of that same message. I apologize, they weren't done at the same time, but we were unable to do so. I can't remember off the top of my head when that's going to happen, but it may be a little bit away. So that's the answer. So I answered it after all.
Yes, you did. Ah. I just thought you were rambling. You do that on occasion.
I do.
This is from Sherry. It says, this has to do with it entering living people into the tree. A woman I help has tried to enter one of her children on multiple occasions, but the website just stalls. I've never seen it happen with anyone else. All of her other children are saved in the tree, but this kid just stalls the site. I've contacted Family Search and the problem back in November, but they haven't responded. Maybe they have.
This is Debbie, D-E-B-I?
No, this is Sherry.
Sherry. Mm-hmm. Entering living people.
Just one child, they can't get into the system as a living.
I don't know. Sherry Hendricks, if you're out there, you'd have to send me an email. I haven't seen that, although I've heard about it from others, and it seemed to have been a browser kind of problem or their connection problem. Mm. Okay. Gary asked, how can we add new standardized places, especially for small villages in European countries? There is actually a place you can go, and I believe they actually have begun to allow volunteers to add additional places. I actually haven't visited the place. Actually, I can go look real quick and see if it has a capability. You go to familysearch.org/research/places, And when you do, you can search for a place. You can enter a place and so forth. Let's see. El Paso, Texas. Search. I don't know. Does somebody out there remember? There's now a volunteer tool that allows you to add more entries into the places. Has anybody out there used that and knows the URL to that? Otherwise, the one thing you need to do, Gary, is go to familysearch.org/research/places with an S. There's a feedback at the bottom. You can click that and type in a message that says this place is missing for this area, and it'll go directly to that team, and they're pretty quick about adding that in. But I know that we just recently completed work on a volunteer tool where people could actually go in and enter new places into the database, but I'm sorry, I don't know the URL for that, so I'm going to put that on my list of things to find out. For volunteer standard places, volunteer tool. And if somebody out there has done that, then they might could post the whole link. Okay, what's next, Sherry?
This one is from Debbie. I was editing the date of the marriage of my great grandparents, and it seemed a bit confusing because it had been edited 5 or 6 times. I don't know if the current one was at the top or the bottom, and it seems to me like to change it, I was supposed to add an event. Not a newbie, but either I did something wrong or this seems more complicated than it should be. Did I do something wrong?
Yeah, it looks like what Debbie was doing is looking at the change log. When you look at the marriage, or you mean at the marriage date, you can click, see all changes. That looks like what she did, because she said she saw 5 or 6 times had been changed. That would only happen if you're looking at the change log. And then the purpose in the change log, always the one at the bottom is the oldest. The one at the top is the most recent. Plus over on the right-hand side, you just see the word current if it means it's the current value. Otherwise, it'll have other dates. It'll have other dates that says restore, I think is what it says. So you can click one of the earlier dates and say restore it back to that date, or you would just go and edit the date and type in the new date. So I think there was some confusion there.
This one's from Elaine. Today I was working at the Family History Center helping a patron do some merges. It was obvious there were 2 duplicate husbands. I told her to write down their numbers, but the possible duplicates said 0. It used to allow us to merge by using the PIDs. That did not come up today, so we weren't able to merge.
Yeah, when we made some changes, we needed to separate the possible duplicates. Remember, you used to have to go in and push the possible duplicates button on the person page in order to find possible duplicates. Well, now we do it automatically. Within 60 seconds of any edit on any person in the tree, we can find you duplicates for that person. And so we separated it, and if you go down to the bottom of the person page on the right-hand side, under tools, there's a menu item that says merge by ID. So you no longer go to possible duplicates and find it under that. It's a separate menu item. You click it, and then you can enter in the other ID and merge the two together.
Okay. My mom is in her 80s. This is from Debbie. And we have been scanning family photos like crazy on top of the 1,000 she already has. We need an easy way for her to rename, identify, and even discuss the photos that does not require her to type. In addition, we'd like the info to go with the photo if we share it. I've tried acting as scribe to edit the metadata, but even though I type fast, it's still tedious, and I wasn't successful in getting the updated metadata transferred to the photo. Do you know of a system that works, or where I might find an app developer to see if they market for senior-friendly photo information preservation?
Well, what she's trying to do, yeah. So I believe what she's saying is that she went in to type some information in a memory, like a story or the data. Mm-hmm. And in the process, a second here, I'm checking out something. in the process, the system decided there was no activity on the system. And so when they went to type it in, it didn't work because it was already, you know, it was already there. It was already gone. It figured that you walked away. And they, you know, so what I recommend for that is teach the person to use Word or to use a notepad, which is simple. Just open notepad, type your stuff into the notepad. You can take all day if you want for that person. You say, this is what the data I want to put in that person. And then you go copy and paste into the tree and then save. That way, if the tree's timed out, you can re-log in, go back to that person, and just have to copy and paste.
Well, she doesn't want her mom to have to do it. She says she's trying to do it alongside of her mom.
Well, I don't know what she nuance. I think it's pretty easy to copy and paste.
Okay. We have a problem. We didn't do this. It's not working.
Oh, yeah.
So.
We should have done it before time.
Yep, we should have. So, I'm sorry.
Okay.
So,
okay, let's see what else we have.
You can ask about
that. Yeah, some of the questions since the missus is using her iPad, it doesn't necessarily wrap properly without some work being done to it. Thank you, Sue, for adding that temple policy regarding deceased persons in there. I read it real quick and went, whew, I said the right thing. So, see, I'm scrolling down to see if there's any good, if there's a question out here. Okay, so Sherry says, I heard youth new to Family Search. I have heard that if the parent gives permission for the child's account using parent's membership number, the tree will populate for the youth. Is this correct? The answer is no. We populate based on the membership number of the user of that account. So the mother would actually would probably fail because the mother already has an account, and so that won't work right. So no, that's incorrect. There's some discussions going around internally, so I don't know how you have heard about this out there. The only thing that you have to do by parents is parents have to give permission to allow the child's account to be created, but the child still has to have their membership number in order to properly create the tree. Okay, will we eventually be able to edit information as we are attaching sources instead of going back to the detail page and adding information? Kathy is asking that, and the answer is yes, we want that. It's been a desire for some time. There's just been some design issues that we're trying to work through. And let me help you out on understanding some of the design concerns. The rule of Family Tree is show, encourage or discourage, and then allow editing. So the problem with our current view in like SourceLinker, for example, when you're attaching a source, it shows you the data, but it doesn't show you the sources. It doesn't show you the reason statement. It doesn't show when it was changed. It doesn't show who changed it. And you can't get all that data. And because the goal of the SourceLinker was get it all on one screen so you can see all the family at once, which is great. And it's been a great tool. And so, but we recognize the desire to be able to edit data on the person while you're looking at the record, or bring over data that's better than the data that's on the person. But in order to do that, we have to be able to show that information so that you can make a good judgment that whether that data is really should be over there or not, based on the sources that are already tagged to that event and the reason statement that somebody left behind and when it was changed. So we're working on some designs. We've got a preliminary design that we're reviewing. It's not going to be a quick process because we don't want to we want to minimize our changes later. So we're trying to be really careful, make sure we do it correctly in the right way and give it lots of testing. So, but our desire is to allow you to be able to do that eventually. We're not purposely not doing that. If okay, here's one by Keith. If one of the ancestors ordinances have been shared with the temple system by someone else and have not yet been done. Is there a way for me to request them? Not really. People can call into support, and sometimes if they're not overloaded, they may release them to you. My advice to you is just wait, because our intent with all these changes with ordinance ready, we're also changing how the temple ordinances work in the temple and how inventory works and the temple shared list that's shared across everything, and how the tree shows these ordinances that are shared with the temple. So that leads me to a segue a little bit, where I'm going to say, I think you let me know if you want me to do this, but I think it would be of value for me to give my Roots Tech presentation, my member version of the Roots Tech presentation, in our next Facebook Live. You let me know whether you're interested in seeing that. I think people will. You were last time, so I suspect you are this time. And in that slide deck, as we go through it, you will see answers to these questions about how it all is going to work. And then you're going to be just tickled pink, except you're going to want it now instead of when we can get it done. All right, when looking at filmed image, the fifth or so image always freezes and I have to refresh the page to view it. This happens in every computer I use. I've cleared the browser and sometimes it helps, but then it starts again soon after. I use Chrome at home and in the computers at Family History Center. Yeah, we've seen some of this occurring. We believe that we fixed the problem. The team over there thought that they had to fix the problem. I think Carrie, if you would send me a little more explanation on that to my email, ron@familysource.org, along with some dates, maybe when this was happening, dates and times, that may help them narrow down, especially if it's been fairly recently. That would help them narrow down what was going on in the system. So please send that email, and then we'll be able to take a look at that closer and see if we can get that bug. There was an issue that we were having before where we were making some changes with the images in the back end and the database couldn't keep up. It's an older database. We're looking at updating that database actually very soon here. It may be all related to the fact that the database is on old hardware that needs to be upgraded. We're moving it into our cloud services over the next several months, and we think that will solve a lot of the problems, if that's the problem. Okay, thank you everybody for helping people out there. The help button in the right corner, they're still talking about that.
There's a flip thing on there.
Mm-hmm. I'm just looking down here to see if I find some questions. Friend of mine is 70, is adopted, did DNA on Ancestry, found biological family and who her parents were. Parents are now deceased. Can this person do the temple work for her biological parents? The answer is yes. You can always do the work for your biological parents, your biological family. You have rights to do that that work. How do I help an inactive member get their membership number? Yeah, hopefully this inactive member is in the ward list.
Yeah.
If the inactive member is in the ward list, what I would recommend doing is going to the so is Beverly asking this, what I would recommend, I think you got, the person has attempted to get it through the bishopric without success. That doesn't make sense to me. Only reason that they wouldn't be able to get the membership number is if this person's record is not in the ward or in the stake or in the ward.
They may have moved from the last time.
They may have moved from where their records were, and then maybe what you could do is ask the person if they'd be willing to give you their name and birth date and prior ward if they knew it. Or name and birth date, and then you can go to the ward clerk if they live in your ward and say, this person lives in the ward and here's his name and birth date, and contact him from address and phone number. Could you bring his records over? And then they'll have the membership number, but they can look it up. Okay. Oh, there it is. James Tanner, thank you for replying. He put in the place where you can do the volunteer. This allows you to enter in data into places.
Nice.
So it's familysearch.org/ask/volunteer. Thank you, James.
Yes, thank you.
Cousin James.
That's right.
I got lots of cousins. Yeah, all over the place. Them tanners, you know. They're everywhere.
The heart,
they're everywhere.
Multiply and replenish.
Okay, let's see. Yeah, thank you very much. Okay, I think we're down to 1 minute. It's been a fast, rapid hour. Boy, it went by quick. We tried to answer as many phone calls as we could. Let's just, Beth, just put out the last question here that I see. Oh, no. I'm new to Family Search. I've submitted many photos, and this is Tammy. And to keep them organized in what I've added data to, can I put them in archives? I'm not sure what you mean by in archives. You can put them in folders inside of memories. You can create any number of folders you want, or albums. They're called albums, but I kind of think of them as folders, and you can label, call the album whatever you want, you know, Aunt Jude or whatever, Aunt Joan or Pid This Pid, and then you can put all the pictures and stuff inside of there if you want. Mm-hmm. That's what most people do. And then Beth, what is the best way to copy a photo from a phone to memories? Well, the best way to do that is to install the Memories app that we provide. You just go on the App Store or the Google Play Store and search for Memories, Family Search Memories, and you can download the app. You can also do it with the Family Tree app. You can also take memories that are on your phone and include it, attach it to an ancestor. The Memories one, what that job is to collect stuff that'll go into your gallery. So that's what that does mainly. The Family Tree one will attach it to a person for you because you're going to put it up on a person. So I think the easiest way for you is to just, Beth, so you also said, well, can I plug it into a PC and go to memories and just drag and pull them from the phone? Sure, you can upload your memories from your phone, synchronize it with your device, or go to get Google Photos, which is free, and you can have Google Photos, take all your photos from your mobile phone, and it'll actually put it up in your Gmail account or something if you have one there, and then you can paste it from there up. But I think the quickest, without having to worry about all this connecting things and going to do, is just go get the Memories app and then just say add memories, and you can pick all the pictures you want out of your photos on your phone and just say go, and it's all up there. It's
wonderful.
Okay, everybody, thank you so much for coming. Welcome any new people that haven't been here before. We don't usually go this fast.
No.
But we're trying to catch up. We did get into almost February.
Yep.
A set of questions. We did answer, I think, most of the, if not all, the questions that were asked in the last hour. So thank you very much. Reminder, we'll be doing this again next week. So next Thursday, the same time. Please join us. And I'm assuming I'll have Tegan put out a thing. Let's see. How come I can't scroll that down? There we go. My plan right now is to show the Roots Tech presentations, and so I'll have Tegan send out a question if that's what people want me to do, and then if we get general, majority, then I'll do that. So someone asked, are photos compressed when uploaded? And the answer is no. We take them exactly how they are because we don't want to reduce any quality or any fidelity of the picture. Some others do, like Facebook and stuff. They'll reduce the quality of the picture to reduce storage space, and we're more interested in preserving the best copy we can get. We're only limited by the size of the picture the size of the file. All right, everybody, have a good night. Thank you for joining us.
Yes,
thanks. It has been a blast, and we will see you next week. All right,
there I am.
There you are. Thanks. Bye.
That's going to do it for us today. We hope you enjoyed this episode of Family History Ron. So what can you do to support us and helping us with our goal of sharing family history with the world? Well, let me give you a few things you can do right now. First, you could head to Apple Podcasts or wherever you're listening to this podcast and give us a 5-star review. By boosting our reviews, it puts us to the top of the list, which lets our podcast be seen by a whole new group of people, which means more people, more listeners, and the more people we get to educate. Second, you could leave a review on the podcast and let us know what you love about it. It always helps us know what to create more of for you. Third, you could share the podcast with those you know who love genealogy and history as much as we do. Those three things are super simple. You could do them in 5 minutes even, and it would help us boost and share our knowledge with those around us. Lastly, if you want to catch Ron live, because he's always way more fun when he's doing hand actions and drawing you crazy pictures on his whiteboard, then head over to Facebook, search Family History Ron, and follow or like the page. We go live twice a month. It's always on a Thursday, and they start at 7:30 p.m. Mountain Standard Time. We can't wait to see you there.